You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game. I bumped something there. Let me start over. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 29th. I had to look at the calendar. June 29th, I was actually looking at the calendar and lost track of what week I should be looking at. June 29th, 2015, you're listening to episode 161. My name is Rob.
And you're the worst at this.
Hey, why break with tradition?
Yeah.
Why go out
Somebody
of my way?
Somebody tweeted at you recently and was like, you should be proud of that intro you did. That last one you did,
one
that
where
was really terrible.
Kind of did the little sing, the rising, I'm not a singer because I don't know the right words to use. But, I was very proud of it. And I appreciate that. Let me see who that commenter was, actually. I'm sure I've got it here. While I look that up, you should talk about other things.
Okay, I'm going to try this beer I have called Final Absolution. It's a good Belgian triple ale. Rob swears by it. It's made by Dragon Mead, which is a dumb name for a company that doesn't make mead.
It's
just saying.
It's really good beer.
Well, it is no Chai PA, but it's pretty good.
The other one they make is what did they do? I think they do Le Fin de Monde. I think that's Dragon Mead.
Okay.
That's the end of the world. That's French for the end of the world. That's also very good. Another Belgian style. It was TGIK Games said I should be proud of that intro, by the way. So thanks at TGIK_Games_CR on Twitter. So thanks for the compliment, TGIK Games. You're the man.
And you have bad opinions. Thanks.
No.
Okay. Well,
I don't know why you hate the builders.
So
I'm about to drink a beer too.
Yeah. Can you try the beer and then I'm going to talk about something.
Sure, that's fine. I've got Mackinac Island Brewhouse Blonde Beaver Trap.
It's the classiest name for a beer,
man,
ever.
Belgian style wheat beer. Let's give this a shot.
Oh, let's.
It smells all right. Yeah, it's okay.
You totally didn't plan it, but I could totally hear the glug as you drank it. That was impressive. Yeah. nice sound effects for the listeners at home.
Yeah, that was that's tasty. I could drink quite a bit more of that. I rather enjoy that.
Good news, there's at least 11 ounces left.
Hey. So you were going to talk about something?
Yeah, so can we talk about gossip for a minute?
Gossip? Yeah.
So I didn't tell you that I was going to bring this up, but
I
think it's about time to bring this up, and you'll know as soon as I start talking about it, but
I'm a little nervous now.
I heard about something lately.
Did you?
You know, the design community is a tight knit community.
It's very tight. Right? I mean, it's a close community.
Yeah.
We're very entwined in each other's lives, really.
And any time that there's a issue or argument, it can really be hard on people, whether it's on Twitter or in private or public.
Is there a beef, Jason?
I think there's a beef.
Oh no.
And I think it's between two designers, I think it's getting pretty heated.
They've
done a decent job of keeping that outside of the public, but we're going to just bring it into the public right now. Because
you know, if I've learned anything from life itself, it's important to talk about things.
Yep.
And expose hurt feelings.
Yeah, and scandals.
You know, right. When you have a raw nerve, the best thing you can do is poke at it as much as possible.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to say their names, but I think I'm just going to.
You're
going to
just...
Yeah, I think... So, normally a really nice guy is Jason Tagmeyer, but just in this situation, he's a pretty big jerk.
Is he?
So, he picked a fight at Unpub with Joshua J. Mills, and they, like, I don't want to...
Is that still going on?
Still going on.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
It's pretty bad. Like, it almost came to blows.
Ooh.
Like they were, like... Ooh. It was at the... I think it was the Unpub dinner. They almost got in a fist fight.
I did see a bottle get broken over a counter and held out.
It was bad. So, you know, Tagmeyer, he's a little guy, but he is a fighter.
Uh-huh.
And he's scrappy.
Yeah. I don't know. Josh seemed like the kind of guy who can handle himself.
Well, Josh was so upset that he decided to catch a flight immediately and leave the country. Went to Iceland. Said he was going to train in Iceland.
Wow.
To be an Icelandic warrior. And that he was going to come back and he was going to school Jason Tagmeyer. So if we hear any more about this, we'll certainly pass it along to you guys.
You know, and I heard that the training regimen up there in Iceland is actually pretty intense, you know. Yeah. Lots of alternating between hot spring baths and ice-cooled water.
Right.
You know, shuffling cards while you're jumping back and forth, you know, trying to train your hands to be steady.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've heard of any other tasks that they do up there.
You know, I think they have to pitch games well underwater.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So,
wow.
If I was Tagmeyer, I'd be afraid. Plus, I mean, Joshua J. Mills looks a little bit like a wild man with that the beard and the hair.
It's true.
You know,
it's true. He's a scary dude.
Also, he works in video games, which is even scarier.
You know what, though? I mean, Tagmeyer, on the other hand, you know, he's got the card throwing down, you know? He's basically Gambit. You know, he's basically Gambit.
Yeah.
He can fling. I mean, he doesn't do the whole charging thing and making things explode, but
doesn't need to
because he can do some serious damage with those cards.
It's true.
And I mean, and Josh, like we said, he's a big guy. He can handle himself, but I'm not sure if he's going to have the speed to dodge those cards.
It's going to be tough. And see, a lot of people know that Jason Tagmeyer has been publishing these little games and these wallets. And what they don't know is mostly it's just an excuse for him to carry weapons around.
It's true. It's true.
He likes to have a lot of different things. And he's been experimenting with different coatings and stuff on them to see what will do more damage, you know?
Wow. Yeah. It's actually, I've heard that his chemical sciences are, I mean, he's getting very good at that, you know?
Yeah, doesn't surprise
me. He's been doing a lot of research in coatings and protective seals and things. Well, gosh, I hope that I just don't know what to hope. I hope that this works out okay. You know, our community, you know what? I have an idea.
Oh, what's that?
I wonder if maybe we could help them work out their differences.
You think we could?
I think that we might be able to do that. That might be a good idea.
If we're going to do it though, I mean, probably like in a live public forum, we might be the best way to do that.
Well, we need an audience to make sure it's fair. Yes.
That's a good point.
That's right. So open to anybody. Yes.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good idea.
Because fairness is above all is
what's
important.
What's a big get together where there'd be a lot of gamers and game designers at? I can't think of anything.
I can't either. Let's keep that in mind.
Let's do that.
Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. We just missed Origins. Bummer.
Yeah, too bad.
Nobody
about that.
Was there. It's okay. Just kidding. We weren't there. Everybody else was.
Okay.
We'll think about that.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Let's give that some thought. And
and listeners, you know, if you have any words of wisdom you want to throw to either Tagmeyer or Josh, you should do that. You should definitely do that because
reach out to them on Twitter and let them know that you know that it's important that they work out their differences.
Yeah. Tell them it's important. You know, tell them that, you know,
with extreme prejudice.
Yeah. Yeah. Violently, if possible. So, all right. Hey.
Wow.
Glad we got that. I feel a lot better now.
I didn't even know it was coming, but I feel better now too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, anytime you can muddle in someone else's business to try and solve a problem that's not yours, in public, I think it's a good idea.
It certainly makes my life better.
It does for me too.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Makes me feel good about me.
Yeah, me too. Right. Me too. Yeah. Not about you, but about me.
Well, right.
So, I mean, it's not about you.
Good. Well, we changing the subject again.
Yeah, let's change the subject. I love changing the subject.
Because we played.
I feel like we're talking like we're on NPR right now.
Well, a little bit, like, you know, because, you know? I mean, we're having.
It's great. Yeah.
It's important that we have a conversation here, you know?
I'm Dick Gordon, and this is The Story.
Dick Gordon is. Dude, Dick Gordon is a boss, all right?
Yeah.
That dude is a boss.
He also has one of the best shows on NPR.
Yes.
So.
I was listening to that show one night driving home from somewhere when I was in college, and he was, I don't know, but, you know, he takes calls from people, right?
Yeah.
People call in, they talk to him, they talk to the experts he has on the show. I don't remember what the topic was, because it was just on because, I was listening to it because it was on, because I was on my way home. I was probably on the edge of being too drunk to drive. I don't know. I was in college, so I made a lot of bad decisions in those days. So I needed, you know, windows down, cold air, needed some sound just to keep me from, anyway, not going to incriminate myself any further there. But he was talking to some guy called in and started telling his own personal story about that was very, you know, kind of impassioned and emotional. And then the guy said, and that's when the aliens came down and abducted me. And Dick Gordon ended that call and just totally let it go. And he rolled right back to one of his guests and said, so-and-so, how do you feel? And just moved on with it. Did not let him phase him for an instant. It was awesome.
That guy's the man.
Dick Gordon is the man.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you were going to talk about something, though?
Oh, we played some games lately.
Really?
We did.
Oh, we did.
You
oh,
and
we,
I did.
We did.
We
hey,
did.
I forgot.
Yeah. It was like last week. We went to our local board game bar, One Well Brewing in Kalamazoo, yeah. Michigan. Is that in Kalamazoo technically, or is it Portage?
It is Kalamazoo, because it is across Kilgore. Kilgore
right.
is the
yep.
dividing line.
Okay, so, you're right. Yep. So, yeah. So, we went there, and you and I and Christine and our new friend and builder and coworker, Alan,
yeah,
came out with us, and we played Gunslinger and Ramblers.
Yep.
And we played Saloon Tycoon.
Indeed.
Yeah, so... talk us through, while I drink a little bit more of this beer, if you could talk us through what was new or what we were testing here with Ramblers.
With Ramblers, it was a lot of just fine-tuning. We introduced this new bonus die aspect where if you get caught cheating with your poker hand, then your opponent gets to use a bonus die. Normally, it was a maximum of 3 dice
mm-hmm.
you could roll, but now this bonus die is up for grabs. And
right.
if you're caught cheating, your opponent rolls it. If your opponent catches you not cheating, you're being clean, you're being fair,
yeah.
then you get it in the fight. So I really like the way that works, and we had some really fun upsets where Christine rolled like 3 dice, and you rolled 1, mm-hmm. and you got a 6, and you just shot her, and it was
yeah.
the best, because
yeah.
that's how the new system is meant to work,
mm-hmm.
And I was very pleased to see how well that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Alan did a great job pointing out a few just like little errors on the cards that mm-hmm. Are good because it could be confusing, where I said,
sure.
what happens if, here's a good instance. All the characters have bar abilities, which is,
yeah.
well, they're standing at the bar before you can bring them into play. They have an ability that either triggers when they arrive at the bar,
mm-hmm.
while they're standing at the bar, or when they leave the bar.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed out that 2 characters, Doc Nebraska's ability is when a Rambler passes out at the bar,
mm-hmm.
he revives them. And then there's Rico the Shiv Chavez, and his mm-hmm. ability says if a character passes out at the bar, he shanks them and collects their bounty.
Mm-hmm.
And then whoever takes him later gets those bounties. It's pretty powerful, and it's pretty cool. And anyways, he pointed out, like, both of those guys came out at the same time, and he was like, whoa, what happens? And I was like, well, the way I would think of it is, you know, if Doc revives somebody, how can he kill them? And he's like, well, it's not super clear. And I was like, that's a great point. So I reworded it now. So now the card would say, instead of passing out, the Rambler is revived and they discard their whiskey token. So mm-hmm. now they don't pass. You know what I mean? So it's just those
yeah.
little
things like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that, you know,
totally.
That after several playtests, you know, lots of playtests, gosh, like
yeah.
30 plus playtests. Well, way more than that, actually, probably more like 50. Dang, that's a lot of times playing a game.
Yeah.
After that many playtests, still, you know, those little things come up every once in a while, and it's great to have people, mm-hmm. Other people looking out for you. So I was happy about that.
Yeah.
But it went really well. He had a good time with it.
Yeah.
And yep. then we played a lot of Saloon Tycoon. It was a lot of fun.
We did, yeah. Well, a lot of. We played a game.
A game.
Yeah, right.
It was for like over an hour, because we talked a lot and got up to get beer.
Right, yeah. So I think game time for 4 players that know how to play, I think it should still comfortably be 45 minutes
or
less.
Oh, easy, yeah. easy. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Alan had never played before.
Right.
I might as well have never played, because you changed a bunch of rules.
Yeah. Not a bunch, but...
enough to where, like...
it wasn't as familiar for you.
And I wasn't yeah. playing as fast as I normally would, because right. I actually had to think about, like,
right.
what am I going to do now?
Right, yeah. But yeah, so there were a few changes that I was trying out here. A lot of them based on stuff that AJ wanted me to try.
Uh-huh.
So the biggest change was goal cards.
Right.
So, you know, there's still the scoring, and you get points for what you build and for combinations of characters at the end of the game. But there are also goal cards that are in play, some that are open for everybody and some that are secret that you have on your own. And those goal cards are goals that you can achieve mid-game. You don't have to have them all achievable at the end of the game. In fact, none of them are based on stuff that you hit at the end of the game. It's always going to be something that you can hopefully hit that target on in the middle of the game, right?
Right.
And so that might be get the certain character, these certain characters together at your saloon. It might be build a certain number of this specific tile or combine these three tiles together in your saloon, or reach a certain amount of gold, some kind of interim target. Then a lot of that, because a lot of it is tied to characters, a lot of it then is facilitated by the other new ability, which is to spend gold to move characters of any type at any time. So previously, you would get a good guy character for free when you bought a special tile, and they would come to your inn or your saloon, and they would stay there permanently.
Right.
You know, but bad guys could be moved around with cards. In this new version, you would still get a good guy if you buy and finish their tile, and you're going to get them for free right away, which is a more efficient way to get them.
Of course.
But you can also spend gold basically to bribe them to go wherever you want right. them to.
Which is nice.
Which is cool, yeah. Now, I was doing that at 8 gold to bribe someone. I feel like maybe that was too much. Next time we play, I'm going to pull that back to 6 gold to move somebody.
Yeah, because no one really used that.
I think we used it one time.
Did we?
Only once, though.
You know, if you're going to have that, I'm not sorry to just spout things off here, but you should have one character that's like too good for that. One character, make him worth a good amount of points, and then cannot be moved. Like, cannot be bribed to move. A good character. It'd have to be a good character, mm-hmm. so it's a positive effect.
I might prefer to have a card in the deck that you can play onto a character. And there might be two of them. One you put on that character to hold them in place, and another one to undo that hold.
Okay.
I think I might like that better. I think AJ would probably like that better, too.
Okay.
Because I'll be honest, when AJ suggested that we'd be able to move everybody at any time, that was very counter to a lot of the ideas that I had and goals right. that I had for the game early on. And I was resistant to that change, but he was absolutely right. Making that simple change opened up so many possibilities with these goal cards.
Indeed.
And I fully believe in these goal cards now.
The goal cards?
It changed the game yeah. a lot.
So I've played the game a lot of times, and I've loved the game. But the most fun I had playing the game was with the goal cards.
I agree 100%.
It was funny because at the beginning I was like, I'm just going to ignore these. And then I won, and it was because I had over 20 points in goal cards.
Yeah.
Like, right. that's, if had I had all of those, I would have taken probably fourth. So yeah, at least third, if not fourth.
Yeah,
so
yeah. So I have a lot to do on those cards still to, right. I need
balancing,
to
balancing. Yeah.
And some balancing. The point values on a lot of them I think are wrong and are bad, and I need to write a few more. But in general, it's the best thing to have happened this game since I decided to get rid of the cross and go to the L.
Right.
It's the best thing to have happened in the game since then, and I'm thrilled about it.
It's pretty awesome.
Just remember that I didn't actually email AJ and let him know how that went, so I should do that before this episode goes out.
It makes you feel happy. I did the same thing. So the other thing, and maybe you mentioned this, maybe I missed it, but the supply cubes.
Yeah.
You can now buy supply cubes for free, as a free action at any time.
Any time, yeah.
Which was the single most freeing thing about playing.
That also helps speed the game up a lot.
Yeah, because so many times you'd be like, oh, should I do this or should I buy mm-hmm. supply cubes? Now it's like, I'll do this and then I'll buy supply cubes. Mm-hmm. Plus it allowed, like, I was able to buy a few, do some actions, and then buy some more.
Easier to make
the
those combos.
Of those actions,
right.
Yeah.
Which, and Alan picked up on this to say that, you know, that being able to chain those things together, you know, in your first introduction, you're like, I can only do one thing per turn and buy some cubes. Man, that kind of sucks. But once you get a few turns in and you realize how you can combo those things together, and a lot of that is that same feeling that you get when you're playing Dominion, which is something that I've always aspired to try and get that same feeling into one of my games, and I feel like it's working better than ever now with that change. For
chaining stuff
cubes.
In a game with limited actions feels so awesome.
It just you just feel like you're winning, even if you are in last place. Being able to do that makes you just feel like a total.
Well, and
winner.
There was one turn where I chained like 6 actions together.
It was
honestly
nuts.
I didn't even do that much on the turn,
mm-hmm.
but like in the end, I accomplished what I was trying to accomplish and took a bunch of great cards from you guys by doing mm-hmm. that. You know, so it was good. So not overpowered, but good.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that.
You should be.
Be happier. So thank you, AJ. See, this is what working with publishers should be like, you know?
It is, yeah.
You know, somebody...
AJ has really good intuition on games.
Yeah, you know? Somebody who cares about the game and has really great ideas on how to improve the game. It's fantastic.
Well, it was like one of the best publisher moments I think I've ever had, probably if not the best, was I sat down with AJ at Unpub and I said, man, this dice system's not working. Roll for highest die means the guy always wins who has the more dice. And he said, what about this?
Yeah.
And then he completely changed the game by changing the dice system to say, highest unmatched die wins.
Yep.
And now it's not that hard for somebody with one die to be a big threat against
Absolutely.
Somebody with more.
Yeah.
And the whole bonus die system that made people feel like they get more of an advantage by doing the right thing wouldn't have been possible, that because it would have been
right.
so skewed if AJ hadn't changed the fighting system to what it
right.
is. Plus, now the fighting system is something more gamery. It's not just like, let's see who's got the highest total. It's
yeah.
you're playing the odds, you
yeah.
know? So,
yep.
anyways,
yep.
so yeah, yay, AJ.
Yay. One other last comment that I want to make in relation to Epic Monster Tea Party.
Yeah.
So I heard back from Will at Playco Games. He just recently launched a Kickstarter for his for a game called Civicus, the dice game. I've not had a chance to play it, but it's a game about establishing a civilization. Kind of a small, compact 2-player dice game. Looks super cool. I read through the rules and they look great and looks fun. It's on Kickstarter right now. I think it's pretty close to funding as of this recording. So hopefully by in the near future that will be successful. Check that out on Kickstarter. But I emailed him to congratulate him on Civicus going so well, and he replied and said that Epic Monster Tea Party is coming along very well. And hopefully we'll have some more stuff to talk about in the near future.
Awesome.
But so I just wanted to share that with everybody that there is still action taking place there.
Yeah.
It has
yeah.
not been forgotten. So
no, it's moving quick, actually.
Yeah, it's moving like. Very quick from the sounds of it.
Quicker than it normally does with the publisher, because normally you have to work with the publisher and they have to do stuff.
Right. But it sounds like he's just taking the game as it is and rolling with it. And
sweet.
I'm
well, it's
really,
a good game. So
really excited about that. So, yeah.
Awesome. We should move on to a feature.
Yeah.
So last week, for our feature, we were like, nobody likes us. Why don't you talk to us? But no, we were like, hey, guys, listen, this is frustrating to us, and we want to make this better.
Yeah.
And we said, help us help you. Help mm-hmm. you help us. How do we get better interaction with you guys? So today's topic is going to be the feedback to that reaction, because we got a crap ton of feedback.
So much that we might have to save some for next week even.
Yeah, so... Yeah. But that's okay because, yep. Yeah, that's okay. So, let's start with, I'm going to kind of intermix some stuff here. So
sure.
people's general feedback was, you guys are the best. Don't change anything. I'm just kidding. This is the internet.
Oh, that'd be great. Wouldn't it though?
Well, no, wouldn't it? Because they weren't actually commenting on stuff. So, that wouldn't be great. There are better things like when they comment on stuff.
That's true.
So, we got a few voicemails and they're a little long. We are going to try and play them. I'm just warning the people, if you're listening and you submitted one and we play one in years later, I'm not going to say that Rob's not going to cut them down a little bit. Just because
I think last week we promised we'd play them in full and would only bleep out curse words.
Did we?
I think that's what we promised last
okay,
week.
Okay. Well, that's what we promised. But
yeah.
some of these voicemails are long. You know who I'm talking about? Julius and Shu. So, yeah.
All right.
I'm looking for this comment here. So the first thing I want to read is a comment from our website, because we don't get many of those, so I want to give preference to that if I can here.
Sure.
This is from Matt Kirk. Hey, guys. So I haven't commented in a long time, but I did want to start you by thanking you for responding to my first email a long time ago and keeping me motivated. Your response and advice helped. By the way, I think this one is not actually about the thing from last week, but that's okay because we're doing all the comments. So.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Recently, I've been working on a design that involves a form of list building beforehand. With you guys working on your CCG recently, I was wondering about your opinions and design strategies around these games that demand more planning before play, particularly about keeping strategic depth without bogging down the experience of the game. And with a lack of decent transition, I have a second topic that I'd like to get your opinions on. In video game design, there's a concept of minimum viable product. I love that term. Mostly because they use it on Silicon Valley, but this concept is used in order to get your core concept down, prototype tested ASAP. In this, you cut out all of the fat and make the prototype simply the core gameplay to make sure that is fun on its own. For example, minimum viable product for the original Mario could have been a level that has a couple of pitfalls and platforms and then maybe one or two enemies, but no power-ups or level gimmicks. This allows the prototype to focus entirely on the mechanics of moving and jumping and making sure they feel solid. I have been wondering if this is taken over to board game design prototyping, and what are your thoughts? So, yeah. So let's answer that in sections here. Let's start with the CCG thing. Can I start with this one?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I'm more experienced with playing those games you had to set up ahead of time.
Yeah.
Gosh, so I don't... So I like those games,
uh-huh.
and I hate that part of those games. Like, building a deck ahead of time, I'm not a fan of. Even for our CCG, every time I'm like, oh, I gotta build a deck. Yeah. Even though it takes literally, like, 2 minutes because there's only, like, 8 cards or 10 cards to choose from, you know what I mean? It's not
right.
hard, but
right.
still. So I feel like if you want the board game to be accessible, or the CCG to be accessible, if it's mm-hmm. going to be a board game that works like that, then I would either, A, not have that, but that sounds like you want it. And if you want it, you should have it in your game. So my big suggestion would be to have pre-built ones that people can use. Kind of like Rob mentioned Dominion earlier. Dominion's very good at that. It says, hey, here's a good play style if you want to do this.
Yeah.
And then as you get more experience, you can swap things out. Like, there are some certain things we don't like, so we just swap those out for other cards that are more fun. And yeah, everybody has a better time.
Yep.
But really,
man, I want to play Dominion again.
I know, I do too. We should play that sometime soon. Next time we play games, we should play Dominion.
Yeah.
So anyways, that I think that's a pretty clear and concise answer. I'm going to guess you're going to agree with that.
I agree with 100%. Yeah. I especially agree with your point that, and I don't like that process either. Some people, I think that might be their favorite part of
Matt Loomis, you know. Andy Lennox.
Their favorite part of Magic and a lot of CCGs is building the deck in advance. But and it's an extremely important part of playing Magic, is my understanding.
Right.
I have no patience for it, but if that's something that you enjoy and that's something that you want in your game, then embrace it and go for it.
Right.
But yes, 100%. If you want to make sure the game is still accessible, then give instructions for a standard or introductory setup.
I would say several.
Several is even better. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like if you... A way to do that with CCG, like CCG style board game, would be to have factions.
Sure.
And the factions have auto plays. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like they have it's either set like this is your team.
Yeah.
Or this is your team. You can swap out any two star characters for other star characters. And then mm-hmm. somebody could just look through and be like, oh, I like the way this monster looks and put it in. Or as the person bringing the game for people to play, you could do that yourself.
Yeah.
I know certainly I've done that in games before like that. Like, here's a deck of this. Just play this. I'm one of those people that's very good at playing the stuff, but I'm terrible at like building decks. Like, when we played Dice Masters, it took me a long time to build the best deck that I could because mm-hmm. I just don't have the patience for it.
Yeah. I don't like thinking about all that stuff in advance.
I want to play the game.
I'm not good at reading cards. Like, reading a lot of cards and then thinking about how they're going to work together, I'm generally only capable of understanding that when I see how they interact
exactly
in action.
I'm much better at that. Like, I'm probably slightly better than you are at looking at stuff ahead of time,
yeah.
only because I'm more interested in it than you are.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I'm by no means great at it. So, and then the second part of his mm-hmm. question was minimum viable per product. And this is something you know a lot about with designing just the core to test a game.
Yeah, I do that probably more often than I should, frankly. I focus on just making sure the basic idea works. And a lot of time, the problem that I have with that is that, you know, that core functions fine, but it's not necessarily fun. And so I lose my passion for it.
It's so true.
And so if you're going to do that, and I think that that can be an important step, an important piece of a design. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. I would just caution you about that and know yourself and know that that's an option or a possibility for your personal experience with that. So, because I encounter that almost every time I do that.
And I actually have the opposite problem, which is I tend to put too much into the first draft, mm-hmm. and then there are so many variables that it's hard to tell what doesn't work and what does work.
Yeah.
Because rarely when you put a full game together can you be like, this game is perfect or this game is super fun. I've had it happen a couple times in my games where I'm like, whoa, mm-hmm. first try on this game is fun. Ramblers was one where like we liked that game from the beginning.
Yeah, right.
Now we look back at what it was and I laugh because it wasn't a good game. But
right, but still.
But the core mechanic was solid.
Right.
And the core mechanic in that game has changed very little.
Very, very little,
So
yeah, and in fact, the game I'm going to pitch next week started out in that way where I had an idea and I thought, oh, this would be a really fun theme. What would the core of that be? And I wrote up a document about how that core would work. And then I stopped and read back over and I said, man, I know that's boring. I know that works, but it's boring. So I need to start over and think about making sure that there's room in that idea for fun. Yeah. So
room for fun. Good plan, man. That's a smart game design tactic. Did I put room for fun in my game? Oh, I didn't. I ran out of space. No fun in my game. That sucks. Okay. So, yeah.
Let's hear a voicemail, huh?
Let's hear a voicemail, shall we? So the first voicemail we have is... Well, so that was the first one from Julius, because right. I'm guessing because we said we would play anything.
And, well, we did.
But I'm going to get you here. I'm going to say you sent a couple more. You sent another voicemail and another email, and that was probably the smartest thing you said in any of them. Bazinga! I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. But you asked for that. So let's listen to another voicemail that I believe is a real voicemail. This was sent by Andrew Wilson, and he did our favorite thing that we've said you can do, which is he went ahead and just sent... an MP3. I said, yo guys,
cool.
I didn't feel like dealing with your voicemail system, so I sent this, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Hey guys, so I'm taking you up on your threat to play the next full unedited voicemail, no matter what someone says. Maybe someone sent one before I did, but otherwise I'm calling in your promise. So I'm Andrew. Some listeners may remember that a few months back I sent Rob Microfight, which was my take on his micro fighting game. I took it in some directions he wouldn't have, most notably by creating 7 characters with different special powers, so that kind of deviated pretty heavily from the symmetrical game with only 14 cards. But at the time, Rob gave me the go-ahead to make the game available for purchase on the Game Crafter. You may want to rescind that with the BTG collectible game in the works, but either way, there were a few development issues holding me back. First, I wasn't totally confident that the characters are reasonably balanced. Now, I'm not saying everything would have to be totally pristine and million-dollar tournament-worthy, but I'd at least want to play out all the matchups a few times and make sure the characters had fighting chances against one another. Or, you know, if a bunch of playtesters told me they thought things were good to go, I'd take their word on it. But some of the characters need touching up. For example, Goyle, the Rundall character, has at least one ability that I don't even think works. Also, the game has another issue that in our few games, my girlfriend and I found a bit unfun. In the setup, 3 cards were set face down and unavailable while the other 4 were in hand. So at the start of the game, neither player knew exactly which cards were available to the other. But after the first round, players would pick up the face-down cards and rotate the played cards into the face-down pile. And from that point forward, for the rest of the game, both players would always know the contents of each other's hands. Now, maybe we're doing something wrong or playing with outdated rules, but what we decided to do next time we play is start with a face-down pile of 4 cards and 3 in hand, and then every time we play a card, we'll draw one from the pile, maybe like a shuffled little 4-card shuffled stack. Then after 3 plays, we'll shuffle the played cards in with the remaining face-down card, and that way we'll never know exactly what our opponent has available. That cuts into a little of the strategy, but it might be worth it. But the development issue that's plagued me the most is that I'd like the game to handle more players, perhaps 3 to 6. Not in like a free-for-all brawl, but in some kind of tournament structure. My idea was that the tournament would play 3 rounds, with each player playing a different opponent each round and with a different character each time. And at the start of the game, or perhaps round-to-round or whatever, players would assign face-down point tokens to different characters and receive points when characters they assign tokens to won. I think it would be interesting to have maybe a -1 token, a +1 token, and a +2 token, but I'm worried that this will incentivize players to lose matches sometimes when they end up playing as characters they've placed a negative point token on, or when playing against a character they've placed a positive point token on. I'd love to hear some ideas for how a tournament structure like this could work, or if there are any existing games to model this after. Anyway, that was all in preparation for the truly self-indulgent part of this voicemail, which is now, when I tell you that I'm running my first Kickstarter campaign soon, or possibly now, depending on when the episode that hypothetically features this voicemail airs. The game project is for Quest Awakening of Melior, and it's a single-player card and dice game driven by like a Yahtzee-style mechanic that lets you use dice to complete your character's combos and use combat, survival, and intellect skills to overcome encounters in a weird fantasy kind of setting. And one of the characters is a kid who turns into a T-Rex, so check that out.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Sneaky, sneaky. Well, yeah, awesome. That sounds cool, actually. The kid that turns into T-Rex, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stubby little arms, but, you know, poor kid.
Right.
Those are some great thoughts, too, on what he's working on with the fighting game. So,
yeah, I don't know anything about any kind of a tournament structure like that. Like obviously, you could get multiple copies of a game and set up a tournament, but I've never played anything that has that kind of idea packaged into the main set of the game. Really, it's an interesting approach.
It is. I wish you luck, but I don't have any ideas for that.
I don't either. You know what I do? I love about his voicemail, though, is I love to hear that he's working the design. That he's trying a lot of different ideas, that he's exploring all the space there, that and he's absolutely right that he took that design in some directions that I never even thought of,
right,
or never really would have, but he's exploring that space as deeply as he can and trying a lot of different options, and I love that. I think that's fantastic. So kudos to you, Andrew. Thank you for the voicemail. I wish that we could give you better thoughts on the tournament idea. That's something that's never even occurred to me before. We'll have to give that some more thought and see if we can come back to that idea. Gosh, to make a game that the whole game is to be set up as a tournament. That's not like where it actually is a tournament structure. That's an interesting idea.
All right, so we've got some more information here. This is from Scott Martell, who is at BBSKOT on Twitter. He said, "Hey guys, I sent you a tweet to the podcast account with hashtag BTG questions about playing games with listeners. So this got me thinking about how could you make that happen over Twitter? Maybe some kind of word game. I don't know. So I finished listening to the rest of the episode and something dawned on me. What about a live episode of live tweets? Is there one thing that I do when listening to podcasts, it's wanting to respond to almost every single question or idea. Then I think, how relevant is that going to be if your episodes are recorded in advance? Anyway, thanks for listening, and thanks for being interesting enough to listen to weekly."
Well, thank
later.
You.
Thank you. So one thing he brought up is the hashtag BTG questions.
Yeah.
And I feel like going forward, we should start using that.
Sure.
Because it's an easy way to track. And then if you have questions in between shows, you can send those to us and we'll try and respond to those that way. But also, it's an easy way for us to track them, to know to ask them, to handle them later. So going forward, when we ask for questions, we'll start using the hashtag BTG questions.
I think it's great.
And so that's a really good idea. And that got me thinking about wanting to play a game with listeners. And all right, so we were trying to think of a way to incorporate this idea of playing a game with you guys, because it would be very much like our podcast to play a game with people, because we like playing games. And so I thought about, what if we were to have a game that was continuing on all the time, and every month we'd have a winner, and the winner would get some small prize. One suggestion I would have might be a copy of our CCG game, which Julius Besser, spoiler alert, will point out in a later email, either this week or next week, that, hey, if we can't go to Gen Con, like he said, I can't go to Gen Con, so I haven't bothered to respond to you because I'm not going to be there to get a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, hey. And then I was talking to Neil, who was also giving me some feedback, as Neil is wont to do sometimes. And Neil said... Neil made a joke about using hashtag BTG rumors to spread lies about us. And I thought, hey, maybe there's a winning idea here. What if the game is made by hashtag BTG rumors, right? And that game is, you guys need to tweet with that hashtag, mentioning Rob and I in the tweets whenever necessary, to say things to and about us that are rumors about the show. Outlandish, crazy. And every month, we'll look through them and we'll read some on air as time allows. And the person with the best one will win some sort of prize. Right now, we're thinking that the CCG might be a good one because we could easily ship that to you straight from GameCrafter.
Yeah, totally.
So that's our thought right now.
Yeah. I think it sounds fun.
So start kicking those up as soon as you hear it. And at the end of a month, or maybe even we'll do a shorter one, or maybe we'll do a longer one for the first one. But you know how we kind of do things on the fly. But yes, people who do that, some of them will win. Mm-hmm. They will win something possibly cool.
Something possibly cool.
Hey, if we can get any publishers out there who are like, hey, I'd like to help with that.
Sure.
Let us know. And you could donate something that we could give away as part of that. So, yeah. Make this stuff really, really embarrassing for us. You know, say nasty things about us. It'll be funny. So,
it'll be funny if you say it about Jason, of course. But you know, whatever.
Or Rob.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason it'd be funny if you say it about me is because The truth hurts. So if you said it about Rob, you know, it'd be awkward.
Yeah.
Because it'd be true. So,
but get back to his question about a live show, a live tweet show.
Right.
That's a really cool idea. Obviously, we haven't done Something for Nothing in a while, which was kind of the solution for that, for kind of live interaction. It's tough to know what the right time to do such a thing would be.
Really tough. And I can tell you, with Something from Nothing, we got a good amount of after listens, mm-hmm. and stuff, but
for the audio and for the YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. For actually on the live event, it was very small numbers of people that would listen,
yeah.
And that would interact with us. I mean, we had a few dedicated ones.
And that was great.
But if they were gone, then it was sometimes kind of dead air.
Yeah.
Because not everybody wanted to interview, you know, to have a conversation with us. They just wanted to watch it as it happened because something terrible might happen, you know, and that'd be funny. So,
but if you can make it to Gen Con, come to our live show. I know not everybody can, but that really is probably your best opportunity to be a part of the show as it happens.
If somebody is coming to the live show this year, and they want to volunteer to live tweet the show.
Oh.
That'd be fun.
That would be
fun. Even if they use BTG rumors and just live tweeted lies about the show.
That'd be fantastic.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That is a pretty close to a live show, though. We recorded on Saturday, and Rob posted the next day. That literally is as close as it gets for us.
Yeah.
And that one is pretty much unedited. You mostly just throw a thing on the front and back and call it good.
For the most part, yeah. Yeah. I don't do anything with that.
Because it's live. People have already heard it. We might as well just have it be what it is, right?
Right.
There's no pretending.
Yeah.
I think we've got one more we should maybe do today.
And save the rest for next week.
Because we're running a little long already.
Yeah, sure.
So this one, I'm going to read another one, and we'll save the rest of the... We have three more voicemails. We're going to save those for next time.
Whoa, three more.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
But this one is specifically about... we'll skip this one, because this is... this is Julius Besser. Julius, I'm not going to read your whole thing, because you're saying, hey, sorry... I can't go to Gen Con, and I would like your game anyways, so maybe Jen can't, as a hashtag. He also said he has no idea what it actually costs to get it, what it looks like, or much of the details about it, but other than hearing a few plays of it. So he doesn't know what it would cost us to send the game. Should be pretty cheap.
I imagine it would be, yeah.
And then also he said, you've pitched other games that I've been more interested in. So I was thinking specifically of Idiot Spy.
Oh,
so Rob, hey, you were like, I wish listeners would tell me what games to work on. Julius Besser says Idiot Spy.
Okay. Good to know.
So
I'll give that some thought.
We also just had some Twitter interactions and stuff with people saying, hey, you know, podcasts are... Well, you know what? Let's listen to one more voicemail here.
Okay.
This is very good about thing. Now, Julius, I think you sent two voicemails, but for some reason, only one of them is showing up, and I'm not sure why. I swear I was able to hear the second one before, but now it appears to be gone. So let me play what we have here.
Hey, BTG guys. Julius here. You guys were talking today about the two-way communication problems that you have in a podcast. I know I'm also a podcaster. I do the one-player podcast, and I know that it's definitely not a unique problem just to your podcast. It's definitely something that affects everyone. But one of the things that I think, in order to really facilitate more two-way communication, has to be actually doing more two-way communication. For example, right now I'm sending you a voicemail. At no point in time, really, am I going to hear back from you to me? I may hear this voicemail broadcast over the whole podcast, but you're not going to call me back. We're not going to enter into a dialogue. We're not going to enter into a communication. I know I've sent you in the past a couple emails with some thoughts or something, but typically those emails are received and then read online in the podcast. There's no response made. There's no continued dialogue, where if I would send you a dialogue, maybe, you know, even something as simple as, well, hey, how do you pronounce your name, or what exactly did you mean by this, or what were you thinking, or, you know, that dialogue says that there's an actual communication, and then when it gets back to the podcast, You can say, oh, we had this whole chat with them over email, and we said this and this. But having those two-way dialogue communications, now I haven't heard the rest of the podcast because while you're in the middle of this, I decided to go ahead and give a call. One of the reasons for that is when you're listening to a podcast, it's primarily passive. Like a lot of people will listen to the podcast as I do, you know, when I'm driving down to wherever it is, I'm going, court, home, wherever it is. But when I'm on the road or when I'm doing something else, I don't really have the opportunity to all of a sudden be like, oh, wait, I need to say something about that. Let's pull open a message on BGG or an email or a tweet and send something. I'm in the middle of a drive. I can't really do that. You guys have created this voicemail thing so that I can, you know, even in the middle of the drive, just stop and give you a call and leave the voicemail and sort of hope that it comes out clear enough. I can understand why some people wouldn't want to do the voicemail thing, but I think it's a pretty cool idea that you can leave a voicemail because a lot of this podcasting thing is passive. I'm doing it while I'm doing something else, while I'm doing some manual labor, while I'm watching the kids, while I'm driving. So a lot of the times it's passive. There's no active portion inherent to the podcast. But you can have other more inherent portions of the podcast by well, not to the podcast, but just the community in general, you know, focus around the guild. Sort of conversations primarily around the guild, follow communications of the guild, or even follow topics that other people talk about on your own guild on BGG or on your Facebook links. Follow on their conversations and bring up those conversations.
Okay, and that's where Julius gets cut off. And then, like I said, he had another voicemail, but for some reason it is not showing up, and I don't know why. I did listen to it, though. And he went on to talk about how Flip the Table does some different things.
Yeah.
So, one, I don't think we have a guild on BTG, on BGG.
If we do, I don't know about
it. If we do, somebody
it.
Tell me where it is, because I didn't set it up. If we do, whoever set it up is freaking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. I'm not a big forum guy.
No,
you know?
I've said this before. I just don't really care for BGG. I use it as little as possible.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, the website is
no disrespect
difficult.
To BGG. It's a big website. I'm sure they do a great job hosting it, but it's just kind of a pain.
But that said, I mean, he's absolutely right. He makes an excellent point about engaging there. And if we have an audience talking about our show in there, I wish I'd known about that before. And
right.
We should. But, you know, maybe it's our fault for not getting involved in that community.
But as he was saying, he is right. It is very passive. And I don't comment that much on podcasts. But one of the reasons I don't comment on podcasts is I feel like they're not going to use my comments. And we usually try to. Mm-hmm. I'm not always great about it. But we try really hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like one of the big solutions here is Twitter. I feel like using Twitter more often to go back and forth with people because we are pretty good about it. If you tweet one of us directly, it's very rarely you will not get a response from us. At least I can speak for myself, but I think I see you do that a lot too.
I try to. Yeah. I think you're still better about it than I am, but I certainly try to.
The only way that wouldn't be the case is if we say, can we get questions? And you send us questions and we read them on the air.
Yeah.
You know, that's different. Yeah. But,
Now on the point of the two-way communication in more detail, yes. Yeah. So Twitter, we try to engage as much as we can on Twitter. Now I think we talked about last week, though, about when I send a question or an email or something to a podcast, I send it because I want them to read it on the show because I feel like that's my reward.
Right.
And in many cases, I would prefer that they do that than one person alone. I would rather have the entire group on the show, be it 2 people or 10 people or whatever, talk about the thing that I'm asking about or the thing that I'm addressing with them, than have one person reply to me alone. Because that's how what I like to do. I like to not email an individual, but I like to email the whole show. You know,
right?
And that's kind of the approach then that I've taken. I've always felt that we should take when we're responding to things like that, that we should talk about on the show because we need to respond to that as much as possible as BTG, not as Rob or Jason.
But that said, some people will say, hey, question for Rob or question for Jason.
That's true. And I shouldn't make that assumption about everybody
else.
And
when people do say that, we usually try and respond.
We try to.
And that doesn't mean we won't read it in the air. Sometimes it does. Mm-hmm. Sometimes responses need an answer quicker than we know we're going to get to. I've had people before where they'll send me a question and I'll say, listen, here's some answers to your question. We're going to try and read it on there, but it's going to be a while and your question's not going to be really valid for you anymore because they're like, I'm getting ready to do this Kickstarter next week, you know? And so I try my best to help people with those when they have questions because I feel the pain of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let us know when you send a message if you really are looking for an email response. Gosh, let us know. I mean, because we can certainly try and do that. I mean, we're busy people, but we usually can make time for that kind of stuff because we want to interact with you guys. But you know, like to Rob's point, I always think, well, they want me to read this on the air, so I'm always afraid that if I just respond and then don't read it on the air, they're going to be like, oh, I wanted you to read that on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So
anyway. So we've got a lot more of those to go through next week.
Yes. Yeah. Shu, we did not forget about you. I know you sent a voicemail. We will do it next week. Yep. Yeah. So definitely you'll hear that one next week.
Okay. You've got to pitch a game now, though.
I do have to pitch a game right now. So I have a problem.
Uh-oh.
The problem is my attention span lately. I've had trouble having a good attention span for bigger games. I like bigger games. I like designing bigger games, but lately I just can't.
You haven't really dug into anything like that in a while.
No, so I've been really focused on micro games, and it's partially inspired by Tagmeyer and seeing how Tagmeyer does so many micro games, and he does them well. So that for me is inspiring, right? So I've been like, well, I'm just going to focus on micro games. Plus, part of the thing when you have to pitch a lot of games, one of the easy things to come up with are micro games. Not necessarily good micro games, but it's easy to get a fully formed idea with a micro game better than it is with a big game. So. That said, I ended up with a micro game. Initially, I called it Fish Food, and you said, dude, don't call it that. You said, call it Fish Delish. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to call it that. So
that's literally the only thing I know about this game.
Is it called Fish Delish?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a game for two players. Two-player game, 16 cards. It's a tough world in the fish tank these days, so say the rules. rival schools of fish compete to form the perfect school in order to make their escape from the restaurant food tank. So you're at this hippie, fancy restaurant, right? And they've just taken all of the living seafood and thrown it all in together in this big, fancy tank. And there's even some seaweed in there and, you know... And you're on the menu. Every single one of the fish in there are on the menu. And all 16, there are 12 cards that are fish type cards. Not always fish, but certainly seafood cards, if that. Living seafood. That's why I didn't call it seafood cards, because to me, when I hear seafood, I think dead. and then four other cards. So the 12 cards are different things like... I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my notes apart here.
Yeah, man, two pages of notes.
Two pages. Well, the one is my spreadsheet.
Oh.
They're cards like shrimp, clams, tilapia, sea bass, crab, mahi-mahi, squid, tuna, grouper, lobster, swordfish, and shark. And then also there are two seaweed cards, one for each player, and two chef cards, one for each player.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the idea of this game, like I said, is you're trying to form the perfect team so that you can make an escape out of the fish tank, Finding Nemo style, and get out of there before you're on the menu, right?
Okay.
So each fish has a value, a value level, how powerful it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that value level is from 1 to 12. None of the same. No possibility for tying with numbers. That was the point. The shark being the best, the shrimp being the lowest. And then each card also has, I'm still not sure what the symbols are, so right now they're just colors, has a color on the left side and a color on the right side. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to get five cards in a row of different fish, where the colors all line up. So if I'm red, then green, the next one would be green, then blue, say. And then the next one would be blue, then yellow. Basically just meaning that they match up. Kind of like, what's that game that we don't like?
I'm sure it's going to be a great example.
No, it is. Nightfall? No. Nightfall. Yeah. That it's all right, but like it's got the chaining thing.
Yeah.
So kind of like that on the sides of the cards, so that you know what you can play next, basically. Mm-hmm. So what happens at the beginning of the game is the cards are all shuffled. Each player is dealt three fish cards and then a chef card and a chef card and a seaweed card. Okay. They look at their fish cards and they pick one of them and they put that face up in this right in front of them. And that card is locked. That fish card or whatever it is will never move throughout the game. Next to it, face up, they put on the right a chef card and on the left, the seaweed card. And then they take their other two fish cards that they have, put them face down on the outsides. So they have five cards in a row, alternating. First one is the middle card that they're locked, they're stuck with forever.
Mm-hmm.
The two specialty cards, and then two more fish cards face down.
The two that are face down, do they know what they are?
Yes,
they
absolutely. Okay, but the other player does not.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Other player has the same setup. And then directly in the middle of the board, there are six fish face up. Mm-hmm. Everybody can see what they are. Okay? So on my turn, I'm going to pick one of my fish that I have face down. I'm going to look at both of them. And then I'm going to place one of them on one of the fish that's out there. Okay?
Okay.
Place it on there. Doesn't matter what value that fish is for me winning it. I put it out there face down. Now the opponent can respond. The opponent takes one of their fish. They could either put it face down on top of mine, mm-hmm. or on top of one of the other unclaimed fish cards. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And then I go again, and then they go again, and then we break. We resolve what there was. So to resolve, the last player to place a card on a fish, if the fish is contested, meaning we both have, mm-hmm. if the fish is uncontested, you just take the fish card, you flip the card over you put on it, and it replaces said fish. And that now everybody knows what card you have, and you put it back in the spot where you just had it. Mm-hmm. Okay? Does that make sense? For the fish you just lost, you put it back there.
Okay.
Okay. The other fish, so let's say that we both have a fish on one of the cards in the center of the tank.
Okay?
Yep. If you're the last one to put it on there, you have to reveal yours. You show us yours. If yours is the highest, I can look at mine and say yours is higher. I just take my fish card back, and you claim the card. I don't have to show you what my card is. There's a little bluffing there, right?
Yeah.
So say I actually want you to think it's lower. I could say, no, you get this one. So a little bluff there. Wouldn't always happen, but I just thought I might add a little bit of depth. So the idea is you're trying to make that line of fish. But what's blocking that is your chef card and your seaweed card. So what do those cards do?
Okay.
The seaweed card says, discard this card at the end of your turn to win an uncontested fish and put that fish in this card slot, right? So any fish out there that no one's going to get, you can throw this away. You get that fish and you put it in the slot face down.
Face down. Okay.
Because your fish cards are all face down until you make your set, except for the center one.
Right.
The idea is that kind of gives your opponent, they at least know what two colors you're looking for on the outsides, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the chef card. Discard the chef card to steal an opponent's unrevealed fish from the game, meaning it's just a face down fish. Mm-hmm. So you could know what it is, but it's got to be face down. It probably should say face down, not unrevealed. And they then get to choose a replacement for their fish because you always have to have enough fish. But what's happening is as the game moves on, you're going to start having more options of fish to play
mm-hmm.
to get other fish. And that's basically the game. You're just working back and forth, trying to be the first one to get the set. One of the strategies, of course, is when do you spring that special action cards that you have because you can only use them once. Mm-hmm. And the rule is that only one of those can be played during a turn. So if I were to use mine, if I bust my chef card out to steal something from you, that means you cannot use one.
And so at some point, so the game ends when I've got five fish.
No, the game ends when you have five fish that match.
Oh, right. That all chain together correctly.
Right.
Got it. Okay. All right. But at some point then, I'm going to have to use my seaweed and I'm going to have to use my chef.
Right.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I feel like there's probably more design space in there.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to do the start with the core mechanics and build from there.
So the fish don't have any individual powers. It's just about how they chain.
Right now they don't. Let me tell you, that was real hard for me not to do.
I bet. Yeah. I'm kind of impressed.
So I actually want to prototype this game. I think I will. I mean, it'd be super easy to prototype, just to try it out. And if it's fun, if it has legs, then I want to, or fins as it is, then I want to turn it into something that I can use, you know, for, I don't know, to show people, bring it to Gen Con or something.
Sure.
And then maybe give some special powers to just certain fish.
Sure.
But I really want to know if that core thing works. One of the ways I've been designing lately is, I don't remember if I mentioned this before on the show, but I will anyways, again. One of the ways I've been designing is I'll actually take a post-it note and I just draw kind of a cool setup of cards, mm-hmm. right?
You did talk about this. Yeah.
And that really has been working for me. Like mm-hmm. when you're dealing with 16 cards or even 18 cards, like it's inspiring to just kind of draw out how you want it to play
mm-hmm.
and then be like, that setup is interesting. How would I use that? You know? And I still have some of those at my desk that I've never used. They're just sitting there waiting for me to get an idea for a theme and to say, hey, how could this work with that?
Cool.
But this fish delish idea really, like, You started to ask me questions about the game you were going to pitch next week. And I was like, oh, crud. I have to pitch a game. And I was like, I need a game, two players, 16 cards. And I was like, weird theme. And I was like, fish in a tank. And then I was like,
Bance.
Fish food. And then you were like, no, dude, fish delish. And now you guys are caught up. So,
okay. And that's the whole story.
That's the whole story. And that's the story.
There you go. All the way back to Dick Horton.
I know. See?
I know.
It's called a callback, Rob.
Right.
Keep up.
It's a beautiful thing.
So, to recap the show today.
Okay. Dick Gordon is awesome.
Dick Gordon is awesome.
Yeah. We played our games.
If you have questions, BTG questions.
BTG questions.
If you want to be in our little contest that would be ongoing for the time being.
If you wanted to make fun of us in the process.
Yeah. Hashtag BTG rumors.
Uh-huh.
That's that. And then Rob's going to tell you a bunch of stuff about how to get a hold of us, which you guys are clearly listening to based on the fact that we have two episodes full of stuff to give you. So.
Yeah. So thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, like you do, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastBTG. Jason is at JASlingerland and I am at poorly_designed. You can buy our games, link through our website where you can get a copy of Water Balloon Washout and link to the Game Crafter where you can get Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game, and the Rope Bum Academy for Bug Based Baking, and come on back next week and we'll do some more of this because that's how we do.
That's how we do.
Later on.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Oh, because it's the final countdown. That's stuck in my head.
Is it?
Because of Final Absolution.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Now it's probably stuck in the listener's head because you probably put that at the end of the show.
There's a fair chance of that. Totally fair chance of that. Are we just ready to move it?
Yeah, let's do it.
I like to move it.
I was just going to say that. Oh, I hate that song.